Hey everybody, it's Andy, and before we jump into today's content, I want to tell you about an extraordinary offer from an extraordinary company called Belay. That's Belay, B-E-L-A-Y. Belay offers five-star virtual assistant services and virtual bookkeeping for churches, nonprofits, and businesses. In fact, several of my friends and associates use Belay and they love them. In fact, they love them so much they say they will never ever go back to managing a personal assistant, which of course makes my personal assistant very nervous. Now, some of you were around when we aired our Creating High Performance Teams podcast this past fall, and after that, we received several questions related to how to foster teamwork in a remote context. And Belay is part of the answer to that question. They are an award-winning, all-remote company where everybody in the company collaborates from their home offices. Belay is a leader in how to create high-performing remote teams, both within their own organization, and they will help you do the same as well. Now, here's the good news. For our podcast listeners, Belay is offering their free download of 13 ways to build a high-performing remote team. It's filled with tips to keep a remote team performing with excellence, and you can download it at their website if you'll just go to belaysolutions.com/Andy. That's belaysolutions.com/Andy. And now, here's Lane.
Welcome to the Andy Stanley Leadership Podcast, a conversation designed to help leaders go further faster. On today's podcast, we'll conclude our conversation with Andy and Sandra about the important topic of leading at home. Andy, tell us again, why is this an important topic for the Leadership Podcast?
Yeah, this is a little bit unusual because if this is your first time joining us, this is a podcast designed for marketplace leaders, but many, perhaps most of our audience are not only leading in the marketplace, they are leading or they're supposed to be leading at home. And this is a big deal to me because many years ago it dawned on me that really my only unique leadership role is father, that every other leadership opportunity or every other leadership role I have in my life or that comes my way is an opportunity that actually somebody else could take, and that if it's a role, it's eventually a role that somebody else will have, that my only unique role in terms of leadership is father. And, you know, Sandra understands as well as every woman out there, every mom out there, that your only unique leadership role is that of mom. So, Lane, as I said last time, and as I tell parents all the time, don't give up what is unique to you for something someone else will do. Don't give up what's unique to you for something someone else will do. In other words, don't economize your leadership at home for the sake of, you know, developing yourself as a leadership as a leader in the marketplace, because your leadership at home ultimately is more important than what happens in the marketplace. Sometimes it's not as exciting. And I think as men, sometimes we shrink back from that because we don't feel as competent at home, leading at home, as we do in the marketplace. But it's leadership just the same, and we are more responsible for getting it right there than any other environment.
Well, Sandra, why don't we start this month's conversation where we ended last month, and that's the goal that you and Andy set as parents.
Yeah, children who want to be with us and with each other even when they don't have to. You know, instead of kids just counting the days to get out of the house can't wait to get away from each other and their siblings and all of that, our goal was for our kids to feel drawn back, not in an unhealthy way, but just to enjoy our family and to want to be together.
And we didn't want an environment at home where we were counting down the days to where they were going to leave either. So. And as we said last time, there are days when every parent feels some of all of that.
Bad days, good days. Yeah. But overall, we wanted that to be the way they would feel about us and their siblings.
Well, I know there had to be many things that really got you to the bullseye of parenting, but practically speaking, what did you do to get there?
Well, as Sandra just said, we did not parent with the goal of perfectly behaved kids. In fact, instead of that, we actually emphasized honor over obedience, honor over obedience. And by honor, I simply mean recognizing the dignity of the other person and treating that person accordingly. You know, in an environment of honor, there's virtually no need for rules. I mean, if you think about it, if we all decide to keep the golden rule, I'm going to treat you the way I want to be treated, then I know the rules. I know the rules even when there aren't any rules.
And it's easy to try to get around the rules.
If you have rule-based parenting or behavior-based or obedience-based parenting, then you have to have a lot of rules.
Right.
And to Sandra's point, every 9-year-old, every 5-year-old, every 13-year-old
can find the loopholes.
Can find the loophole and find a workaround. You said 8, you didn't say 8 p.m.
Right.
So, and if there's no honor, you really have to cover every eventuality with a rule. And it's absolutely exhausting. It becomes a game of catch me if you can. As we talked about last time, Sandra and I are foster parents. And our foster daughter, we've had several kids in and out of our home, but one young lady in particular was with us an extended period of time, and she is we are her forever family. And about 3 weeks after she came to live with us permanently, and by the way, I've asked her if I could share this story. She came in.
She laughed and gave permission.
Yeah. she came and sat down at the kitchen counter and had an attitude that preceded her. We knew she was coming. And by this time, our kids were grown and gone. This is just a few years ago. And she said, okay, so what are the rules? She wanted to know, what are the rules? And we knew she wasn't asking because she wanted to keep the rules.
Right.
No.
She wanted to know what the rules were so she could find workarounds. And
well, she wanted to know what she was going to get in trouble for, because sometimes it's just worth it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And so I said, well, and I said her name. I said, we don't have rules here. And I went into my office and I got a 3x5 card. And on one side, I wrote the word obedience. And I flipped it over. And on the other side, I wrote the word honor. And I brought it in and I set it down. I said, this is how we do it here. And I slid the card over and said, honor. I said, we just honor each other. And, you know,
whatever that means.
Yeah, whatever that looks
that's
like.
What we try to
and
do.
She rolled her eyes and went upstairs. And it didn't work.
It did not work.
It didn't work.
She didn't buy into the honor thing.
No, she didn't like the honor games.
Back then. She's come a long way.
But the point is, if we had given her seven rules or 10 commandments or, you know, that wouldn't have worked either.
Right.
Because it, you know, when it comes to a relationship and developing a relationship, it really is about honor. So we look for ways in every twist and turn of parenting to focus on honoring the other person, not keeping a list of rules.
Yeah, so honor over obedience actually set the tone for two primary family rules that we did have. There were two rules. These two actually flowed directly from that idea of honor over obedience. And the first one was honor your mother. I love this one.
Yep.
Honor your mother. This was Andy's idea. I thought it was brilliant. An example of what that looks like practically is, as our kids were growing up, Andy made the boys stand at the dinner table until I was seated. Nobody could sit down and start eating until I was ready. And, you know, while there's nothing inherently magical about that practice, here's why it was important. We assumed that there would be women in our boys' futures, and we wanted them to be prepared to treat them with extraordinary respect. And we wanted the bar to be set so high for Allie, our daughter, that she would expect to be treated this way by men. We wanted there to be no tolerance for disrespect for men on her part. And so while there are plenty of reasons to respect your mom, these were two primary things that just, you know, hit the bullseye for me as it related to our kids and the benefit of respecting mom.
If you listen to last month's episode, Sandra talked about these different stages of parenting. And that second stage was the training years, 5 to 12 years old. So if you're going to parent toward honor, you have to teach your younger kids what honor is. And they need practical, you know, tangible examples. And so the whole, you know, stand at the table till mom is seated was just a way to, this is what honor looks like. Here is an illustration of honor. So it wasn't the rule so much as it was the application of honor. And the reason I chose honor your mother as opposed to honor your father, or as opposed to honor your father and your mother, was what we had seen, again, in working with so many families, is that in a family where the husband required the children to honor their mom, they honored their father by honoring their mom.
By default, really.
By default,
yeah.
Right. And so that was, again, it didn't have to go both ways. It was just, you know, we honor mom. So that was one of our rules during the training years.
The other thing about that honoring your mom is your kids see you defending someone else's honor. It teaches them to defend the honor of other people.
Yeah.
And all of that packages, I think, together in such a beautiful way for our kids.
But if you dishonor their mother by not teaching them to honor their mother, they won't have much reason to honor their father. And if kids see father dishonor mom, not only are they not going to honor mom, they're not going to honor their father either.
Right. So it has to be modeled.
Right. It has to be modeled. And there again, there have to be practical applications of what does this look like, because people don't know intuitively sometimes, especially kids. And again, this is during those training years.
Yeah, we practiced all kinds of things during those training years. We practiced, you know, sticking your hand out really fast to shake someone's hand. We practiced answering the door and making eye contact. We practiced all kinds of things, and this was one of those things that was a really big deal.
So honor your mother is rule number one. What was rule number two?
Rule number two was thou shalt not lie.
Ooh.
This wasn't a rule simply because Scripture teaches us to be honest, but because God knows and we know lying breaks a relationship. Nothing else matters if you can't believe what you hear from someone. And, you know, lying just throws everything off balance and throws everybody off balance. It's so difficult to have a relationship with somebody who lies.
And that's what we told our kids. The reason that you don't lie is lying. As Sandra just said, lying breaks the relationship. That was our why. Why not? Why can't we lie? Lying breaks relationships. So again, and the reason we're emphasizing this is this ties everything back to the relationship because our goal was kids who want to be with each other and want to be with us when they don't have to be. So everything has to hang on to the idea of relationship. So it's not don't tell a lie because the Bible says don't tell a lie, or don't tell a lie because you'll get in trouble or here's the consequences for you. It's
it
not about you.
It goes back to honor.
It goes back to honor.
It goes back to honor.
It goes back to these relationships. So we did have something kind of funny happen as it relates to this. What I would tell my boys, especially Allie, was too young at this point. I would say, look, the worst thing you can do is tell a lie. That's what I would say. The worst thing you can do is tell a lie. Why? Because lying will break our relationship. So one day I was driving somewhere with our oldest, Andrew. He was in the back seat. He wasn't in a car seat, but he was a little boy in the back seat, couldn't sit in the front seat yet. And Andrew's our thinker. He's our comedian. And he was very quiet. So I knew he was thinking. And suddenly out of nowhere, he says, Dad, I think I know something worse than telling a lie. So he'd been sitting back there thinking, okay, Dad always says the worst
something.
Thing you can do is tell a lie. I know there's something worse. I said, Andrew, what's worse than telling a lie? He said, worshiping the devil. I said, okay, so now we have three rules.
Three rules.
Honor your
new
mother.
New rule.
Yeah, new rule. Don't tell a lie. And don't worship the devil. So anyway.
As Andy mentioned at the top of the podcast, today's episode is sponsored by Belay. And Belay is offering a free download, 13 ways to build a high-performing remote team, so you can create high-performing teams even if your team isn't all located in the same building. You can download the tool and find out more about Belay at www.belaysolutions.com/Andy. That's belaysolutions.com/Andy. Andy, as you said, we've watched our kids grow up, and I've watched your kids grow up to adults, and they're amazing young adults, but obviously they didn't get it right every time. So how did you guys approach discipline?
Well, going back to our sort of overarching goal, we tried to always discipline toward relationship and restoring relationship as opposed to simply obedience. In other words, we tried to discipline them back in the direction of the person they dishonored.
Yeah.
Because especially when kids are young, you know, everything they do wrong in some way is dishonoring. It's dishonoring because they broke something. It's dishonoring because they took their brother or sister's thing. It's dishonoring because they, you know, talk back. There's always the dishonoring aspect, especially when they're young. So again, we elevated the issue of honor. And so since you dishonored mom or dishonored, you know, your brother or your sister or somebody that was over or a neighbor, then the discipline was tied to reestablishing that relationship, which, by the way, as most parents know, is far more traumatic for a child than simply taking something away for a day or a timeout or some of those things, because restoring a relationship is a life skill. It is not intuitive, and yet it's one of the most important life skills any of us can have.
We never outgrow the need to restore relationships.
And the earlier you can teach a child to restore a relationship, the better. And so that was always part of our discipline. Sandra has a great story.
Yeah, we have a really good example of it. I guess our kids were probably maybe fifth and sixth grade, something like that, and Andy and I had been gone overnight. And when we got back to town, we got not a great babysitter report on our boys' behavior. And so when they got up the next morning, I had pens and note cards sitting out, and they had to write apologies, and they assumed that that was it, and, you know, they were in the clear. But as soon as they finished writing their apology notes, I said, now, I want y'all to go upstairs, get your wallets, and meet me in the car. So they kind of looked at me like, oh, okay. So they go get their wallets. We get in the car. And I explained to them that we're on our way to Publix and they're going to use their own money. and they're going to buy flowers for the babysitter, and then we're going to take the note cards and the flowers and walk into her office and deliver them in person with an apology.
No, they're like, take my Game Boy.
They're please, you know, please.
Like 12, 11 yes, or 12, 13.
Yeah, about that age.
Oh, my.
And so that's what we did. It was, you know, to them it was humiliating, but it was something that they didn't forget. And it was about restoring that relationship rather than, okay, y'all were disrespectful to the babysitter, or you disobeyed what we told you before we left, and now you're going to be punished, so give me your Game Boys. It was Game Boys back then. Yeah. Now it would be Netflix or, you know, whatever. But, you know, instead of just removing some privileges or taking something away, they had to do something that was a little bit painful, and it restored the relationship with that babysitter. And so it was just a powerful thing, and it was, I think, far more effective than just simply writing a note or just simply losing a privilege.
And again, back to the context of this conversation, that's leadership. Because leadership is helping the people around us get better at whatever they're doing and helping them thrive. And so taking something away, or, you know, the traditional disciplines, doesn't do that oftentimes. But as our podcast listeners can only imagine, they're thinking, why didn't I think of that? And that's the problem. We get so angry, we're in a hurry. You have to think about it. You have to engage. You have to wait until you come up with the perfect or the almost perfect response that is relationship driven. Otherwise, we just reach for the old familiar easy ways to discipline our kids.
And sometimes it takes a little more time and a little more energy, burn a few more calories trying to come up with it, but it's far more effective. So when it comes to disciplining kids as they get into those later training years and those early coaching years, we've got to start thinking about relational restitution. So I have one more story if I can tell it, and this might have been Andy's finest parenting moment of all time.
Well, let's tell that
one. Yeah, let's tell that one. It took him a while to come up with this punishment, so Garrett had to wait a little while, which was fine. So Garrett had broken rule number one, honor your mom. And so after a little bit of time went by, Andy gave him the instructions for what was going to be relational restitution. So what Garrett had to do was he had to call me and ask me out on a date, buy my dinner, and have a conversation and apologize while we were at dinner. And it couldn't be McDonald's or Waffle House. It had to be a restaurant that I would like. And so
I can just remember him looking at me like,
are you
wait,
kidding
this
me?
Is going to take up so much time.
And
what
money.
Are we gonna, and what are we going to talk about?
Yeah.
And I, anyway, go ahead.
So so Garrett asked me if he could take me to dinner, and I said, of course. And so we went to Macaroni Grill. I'll never forget it. It's etched in my mind. We sat down at a booth at Macaroni Grill, and I pick up my menu, and he goes, Mom, I just really want to tell you, you know, Dad told me I had to do this, but I'm so glad we're doing this, and I just want to tell you I'm so sorry that I was disrespectful to you.
Wow.
And I said, well, you're not forgiven. No, I'm just kidding. I didn't. I mean, here I am. I'm sitting with my teenage son. I'm sitting with my teenage son. He's looking me in the eye with his big old brown eyes and apologizes and asks for my forgiveness. And so here's the thing. Was it Andy's idea? Yes. Did Andy coach him on what to say? Probably. Do I care? No. Our relationship was so restored in that moment and after that dinner. It was just restored completely. And that is just a picture of relational restitution and parenting and disciplining to relationship rather than obedience. It would have been easy to take the truck keys, would have been easy to take the computer or the phone or whatever, but this is about relational restitution.
And children, all of us, but children have to be taught how to do that. It's one thing to say, you know, don't dishonor your mom. Okay, but now that you have, how do we restore? So
how do we restore
again,
it?
Once we knew what the North Star was for us, you know, we want kids who want to be with us and want to be together when they don't have to be. It just, you know, I think channeled some of our creativity when it came to discipline.
And it's just so much better than punishment and so much more effective than punishment. I would like to think he didn't consider it punishment.
So anything else on discipline?
Yeah. And again, we're not child psychologists, so, you know, take this with a grain of salt. But this is something we're absolutely convinced about. We suggest that parents resist pre-assigning a consequence to behavior. And we saw so many parents do this. If you do this, this is going to happen. If you do this, this is going to happen. We We never did that.
It's not the way real life works.
No, it doesn't. You don't know what you'll be sentenced to if you break the law. Mm. You don't know what your the fine will be when you're speeding.
Right.
The world doesn't work that way. So, you know, if you're late, you can't go next time. Or if you don't make up your bed, no video games, all that stuff. We just never did that. We expected them to honor each other. And then, this is gold, I think, when they didn't, we always exaggerated how shocked we were. We would try to look as shocked as possible, like what?
This is when you can be shocked.
Yeah. That's right. This is when you can sort of freak out.
I didn't see this coming.
Wait, you didn't make up your bed? You're late. I just can't believe you're late. And then it's, oh, what are you going to do, Dad? I don't know, because I wasn't expecting this. Because you remember as kids, you knew you were in trouble. Yeah. You want to know immediately, what is my punishment? And as our kids were old enough to process this, and again, this isn't in the early years. This is, you know, toward middle school and high school.
Yeah.
We never, ever handed out disciplinary measures in the moment. Mm. Because we wanted them to know, we are so surprised you did this. We don't know what we're going to do. And the older they are, the longer you can, and in some cases, the longer you should delay.
Mm. And it drives them crazy.
Mm. Drives them crazy.
But they want to know.
But that's how the real world works. That's not part of the punishment. That's, in some cases, and especially the older the kids, the more difficult it is to come up with creative ways to discipline them that, again, restores the relationship. And like all of us, they want to know immediately. It's like, I don't know what. I don't know. I'm so shocked that this happened. So use that time, again, to think up. Don't react. Don't immediately just start taking stuff away. And obviously, as most parents know, you don't discipline in anger. And so it gives you a little time. And you set the expectation. Why? Just never thought you would come in late. Anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, a couple things. There are a few things that we tried hard to avoid because they weren't relational. One, we never did that count to three thing when our kids were little. Like, you know, you have all the way till I get to three before you really have to obey. So we never did the counting thing. We refused to be threatening, repeating parents. Yep. We just decided early on, you know, we're going to say things
enough.
One time.
Yeah.
It should be enough. Refused to be threatening, repeating. And again, no restriction. We just thought as our kids got older, restriction, we just didn't see it as being nearly as effective as that relational restitution idea.
And I think part of the restriction thing for us is, again, we spent about 10 years working with teenagers, middle school kids and their families. And the kids that were always on restriction were the worst kids. I mean,
the parents are having to make exceptions anyway, because there's certain things they are going to let their kids do or that they want their kids to do. That's just way too complicated for us.
We never saw that change the heart of a child.
No.
Yeah.
And
even after the restriction was over, the distance between the parent and the child was the same. It wasn't restorative. It was just, okay, you've done your time. Mm. You know, now we're going to free you to go back into society and hope you don't, you know, repeat the offense. So we didn't do restriction. And we didn't take stuff away.
We didn't, unless it was directly related to the offense.
Yeah.
So, you know, as you get your kids to those training years, you do want whatever discipline you come up with to be related to the offense, like real life is.
Well, Andy and Sandra, as we close, I think one of the things all of our listeners have in common is just the busyness of the life of a leader. So any insight on how you guys handled conflicting schedules and just the busyness of life?
Yeah. You know, some years ago, Andy wrote a book called When Work and Family Collide, and I would recommend get that book. Hmm. It is a life-changing book, I think. Maybe I'm not completely objective, but that's my opinion. You know, we love our kids in our hearts. We have to love them on our calendars. Small deposits over a long period of time makes a huge difference. Some of these are some of the principles in that book. Small, consistent deposits for us, things like dinner around the table. We really didn't eat out much. Mm. I just decided early on with our kids sitting around the table at dinner, that's our time that just starts working toward that goal of them wanting to be with us later, wanting to be with each other later. When we're sharing the ins and outs and ups and downs of our day, they just get connected there. So dinner time was a really big deal for us. Even in the busiest seasons, as our kids got older, as they were teenagers and even having jobs, you know, I would text them at the beginning of a week or at the end of 1 week and say, hey, next week, let's all shoot for being at home Tuesday night and Thursday night for dinner, you know, or just kind of try to lay a little bit of an expectation for the next week so we can make that dinner time a priority.
Yeah, we always say to parents, the goal of dinner isn't eating food. The goal of dinner is to have a conversation.
Right.
Yeah,
and you
connect.
Just can't do that in a restaurant like you can around the dinner table. So that was a big
part. And sometimes that takes some changes to a calendar. So that's really how we handled the busyness. We just decided what's most important, let's get that on the calendar first. Then other things can kind of fill in around it.
Yeah, and I would just add to that, and this would be my closing thought, and really this is what I hear Sandra say all the time. The days are long, but the years are so short. And back to the context for this whole conversation, leaders, your greatest contribution to the world may not even be something you do at work. In fact, your greatest contribution to the world may not even be something you do. It may be someone you raise. So as much as you are committed to being a great leader at work, I hope you'll bring some of that energy and some of that enthusiasm and some of that inspiration home as well.
Well, Andy and Sandra, thanks so much for today. And to all of our listeners, we want to thank you for joining us and invite you to visit andystanley.com, where you can find the Leadership Podcast Application Guide to go with today's conversation. As a reminder, the application guide found under the podcast tab includes key takeaways from today's podcast, questions for reflection or discussion, resources discussed, and more. So be sure to check out andystanley.com today.